Hailed as the great nature writer of this generation, Robert McFarlane is the author of books about the intersections of the human and natural realms. In his latest, Underland, A Deep Time Journey, he delivers an exploration of the Earth's underworlds as they exist in myth, literature, memory, and the land itself. In the sequel to his bestseller, The Old Ways, he looks into our relationship with darkness, burial, and what lies beneath the surface of both place and mind. Traveling through deep time, the dizzying expanses of geologic time that stretch away from the present, he moves from the birth of the universe to a post-human future. Robert McFarlane is the author of the best-selling, prize-winning books about nature, place, and people, including Mountains of the Mind, the aforementioned The Old Ways, Landmarks, and The Lost Words. In 2007, he was awarded the E.M. Forster Prize for Literature by the American Academy of Arts and Letters. It's a great pleasure to welcome Robert McFarlane to the roundtable this morning. Good morning, sir.
Hello.
How are you?
Hi, Joe. Very well, thank you.
Very nice to have you on the program. A great pleasure to speak with you. In the sense of this being a sequel to The Old Ways, did you always know that you wanted to write more about this?
Actually, in an odd way, it's a sequel to the very first book I ever wrote when I was a young man, which is called Mountains of the Mind, and that was a book about why go high, basically, why people are drawn to the tops of mountains, and if there's a question at the heart of Underland, it's probably the opposite of that, which is why go low. But actually, we've only been climbing mountains in the West for about 300 years. Before that, there wasn't really a culture of ascent, but we've been making journeys into darkness to bury our dead, to leave cave art on limestone walls for as long as we've been human. So, yeah, I guess this book has always been tugging at my sleeve as it's been tugging at the human mind for as long as we've been human.
So when you delve into a subject like this, and it seems that, like the subject itself, it could be endless, it could be bottomless.
Yeah,
So how do you put parameters to say, okay, this is what I want to explore, this is my area?
That is a great question, and the parameters I put around this book were ambitious, to say the least, which was that I wanted to begin at the birth of the universe and end 100,000 years into the future and see where I got in between. So you're right, there is a sort of vertigo that comes with that kind of work. In fact, the book, it felt like I was uncovering a buried structure. That's what it came to feel like. It took many years. I first thought of it in 2010, the year when the Deepwater Horizon blowout occurred, when the Icelandic volcano Eyjafjallajökull exploded and closed down our airspace. You might remember that. And then when the Chilean miners were all buried in that same year.
Right.
And I ended it last June when the Thai boys, the Thai football team, went in under the mountain and were trapped. So it felt like Underland stories were always unfolding around it. And between that time, I traveled and I talked and I delved and I dug and I read, and the book took its own form. It ended up in the far north, predominantly Norway and Greenland, and Finland. But it travels around America and Europe and Britain as well through time.
What do you believe the Underland is? Since we became what we are, has been so fascinating to us that this hidden, that we fear it and we're amazed by it.
That's pretty much it. That is the doubleness. Do you feel that, Joe? Do you find yourself kind of at once drawn down and appalled by what lies beneath us, by dark spaces? Are you a caver?
I'm not a caver. I find it fascinating. I think the stories that you mentioned a few moments ago of the what people who have done and have lived and have survived those experiences, I find them to be fascinating. I find the unknown to be fascinating.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily want to be a part of it, but I love reading your book about it.
Well, I think that question of the unknown, I mean, we really walk this thin crust of knowledge. And beneath us stretches ignorance, which is a form of wonder to me. If you look up on a starless night, as I say early in the book, you can see trillions of miles to distant starlight, the light from stars. You can see to the moon's face. You look down and you can't see beyond your own toes. And we have spent so long, I think, trying to comprehend the mysteries of what lies beneath us. And we've done it with myth, and we've done it scientifically. And still it yields astonishment to us. I mean, only earlier this year, a five-year scientific project revealed this, what's called the deep biome, the biological dark matter, which lies miles down into the crust. There is life down there of astonishing quantities, hundreds of times the combined biomass of all humans on Earth, and astonishing diversity. And we only just worked this out. it's space down there, if you see what I mean.
But it's also where we look to hide things, right? I mean,
yes.
So much of this book is where these relics are put and where things go that nobody else wants others to see, right? It's
yes.
Fascinating that it is the depths of the earth where people look to put something out of our sight.
That's right. It's a brilliant hiding place, that which is literally the translation of the Finnish word onkalo, where the book begins its ending, as it were. And that's onkalo, the hiding place, is the world's only successfully constructed deep geological repository for the final storage of high-level nuclear waste. So, you know, for millennia, we've been digging holes in the ground and putting this stuff in it that we don't want. That's the Cloaca Maxima, the great sewer at the heart of ancient Rome. That was one of antiquity's great sort of sumps, and now we have onkalo, which is where we're trying to get rid of safely waste that will remain toxic for thousands of years to come. And I went down into that place 400 meters under the earth, and they're trying to construct a space there that will stay structurally sound for about 100,000 years. To put that in context, the pyramids, the oldest of the pyramids, is about 5,000 years old, not even that. So this is an amazing experiment in post-human architecture. And yet, again, it is also a version of something that we have been doing in the underworld forever. We're a burying species.
The other thing, you were asking the question earlier to me about this, my personal fascination, but I realize that is a question I often ask of mystery writers, of what is it, what, or crime writers, of what is it that has us so fascinated by this stuff. But this is the same thing, really. It's the mysterious. It is a mystery. We certainly don't know everything that is buried underneath.
We do not, and it is repeatedly disclosing itself to us. And I began writing this. I did not know it would become a 500-page book, and I did not know that in the end I would try to write it a bit like a thriller, because it is shot through with this gripping mystery. And I found myself I spent 3 days in the catacombs, 2.5 days in the catacombs under Paris, this labyrinth, hundreds of miles of quarry tunnel, out of which that beautiful city has elevated itself block by block. It's sort of built from its own invisible city beneath itself. And there were times down there when I felt a claustrophobia when I was passing through tunnels 18 inches high, so narrow I had to turn my skull sideways because I couldn't get through otherwise. And I was just wondering what the hell I was doing down there. And then you would burst out of these narrow tunnels into these party rooms that the quarrymen dug for their lunch and their dinner and resting places centuries ago, but which are now occupied by this subculture of the cataphiles who rush down there and fill up these spaces. So the underworld is a place where people go to seek what's precious, but also to reinvent themselves and to find their ways into new kinds of mystery. And that's absolutely right, what you say.
And there's also because we think of these, many of these stories, as you write about, are ancient stories.
Yeah.
And yet you bring us to, as you were mentioning, the footballers just from last year,
yeah,
with the Thai soccer,
yeah,
players. I mean, that is a story that is as contemporary as can be. But again, a story that rivets us and fascinates us.
It's a month. It's a year ago. Later this month, that they went in. And why did they go? We never know. Curiosity, excitement, a trip, young boys. But if you go back to the very earliest written story in literature, which is the Epic of Gilgamesh from about 2100 BC in Sumeria, the same story is told. Enkidu, the servant of Gilgamesh, goes under the earth to look for precious things, to come back with the knowledge that darkness brings counterintuitively. And he gets into trouble. He gets stuck underground and eventually is freed, like the boys were, not by the intervention of Elon Musk, who is a figure from myth, right? He's
right.
The arrogant man god who turns up and thinks he can fix it at a stroke.
The arrogant man god, yes, that old foil, yeah.
Yeah. He's straight out of myth, and he looked ridiculous as a result. And in the end, those boys were made safe by the work of many hands, but they came back to their parents from the darkness beneath, just as Enkidu brings up knowledge of Gilgamesh's children who've died. And it's a beautiful, tender moment in this first of our stories. He tells Gilgamesh, I have seen your children, the children who died before they were born. And it speaks across millennia, that moment, to me. And it's still happening, as it did last year.
Is there anything that is, when you think about it, of being able to determine the future of the Underland?
Well, I am fascinated by the way that the Underland has been used to tell the future. So to go back into classical myth again, the Sibyl of Cumae, the Oracle at Delphi, these were prophetic voices who were summoning their knowledge from below ground. The Sibyl would sit often, figured as sitting astride a fissure in the earth from which emanations would arise. Now, we're still doing this. Glaciologists right now are boring ice core in Greenland and in Antarctica, and they're drawing up this blue glowing ice, which is a museum of atmosphere. They're reading past climates from it, and they're foretelling climate to come on the basis of this. So in an odd way, the Underland is not where we have gone to forget the future or find only the past, but to foretell what is coming. And for me, the book and the subject became incredibly live when I realized that the Underland is surfacing around us now. The permafrost is melting. It's no longer perma. Glaciers are retreating. And as the permafrost melts, methane rises up. Woolly mammoths, wolf pups from 50,000 years ago turn up in the Yukon, perfectly preserved. And bodies are revealed by glaciers. Deep time is shallowing, and the Underland is rising up to meet us. So I think our future is right here, around us now, and the Underland is telling us that.
But we will always have these feelings. I assume many of us will always have these feelings in a relationship to the Underland, of the darkness, the mystery, all of the things that we mentioned before that we'll always have, that seem to be built, hardwired into us.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think claustrophobia speaks of that. It's the commonest of the phobias, really, of the keen ones. There are very few people who don't feel it to some degree, and it's hard not to relate that to this ancient relationship we have with confinement and with darkness. And in a way, that's what makes our enduring relationship with it so surprising too, is that we have been drawn back and back into places that our brain and our spine often screams, don't go there. But there was an amazing dating experiment done in Western Spain recently, the oldest of the European cave art. And there's this technique now called uranium-thorium dating, which allows you to basically scrape off the calcite that runs over artwork, cave art, and then you can date it using the uranium and thorium content. And this showed this art to be about 65,000 years old. Mm. which is dazzlingly old, but is also about 20,000 years before humans, modern, anatomically modern humans, are thought to have reached that region. So this was Neanderthal art. This was way back. People were squeezing into tight claustrophobic spaces, and they were placing their hands on the cave wall, and they were spitting ochre from their mouth against their hands, and then pulling their hands away to leave that print we all know, that incredible image of the hand stencil on the wall.
The name of the book is Underland, A Deep Time Journey by Robert McFarlane. The book is published by Norton. Robert, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for taking time to be with us. I so appreciate
it. Pleasure to talk, TJ.
Beautiful book. Again, it's Underland, A Deep Time Journey by Robert McFarlane. The book is published by Norton. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.